60 Books, presented by Store Consulting and Coaching. Gallup spends 25 years interviewing managers, roughly 80,000 of them across every industry, alongside surveys of more than a million employees. They are trying to answer one question: what do the best managers do that the rest do not? And the headline finding is that the great ones break nearly every rule the profession teaches. They play favorites. They refuse to fix people's weaknesses. They do not treat everyone the same, and their teams outperform. Today, first, Break All the Rules by Marcus Buckingham and Kurt Kaufman. In two sentences, people do not change that much, so stop trying to put in what was left out and start drawing out what was left in. Manage each person differently on purpose. From the Reading Room, this is 60 Books. I'm Miles. 60 of the best management books of the last 100 years, one per episode, read for leaders and teams who think differently, and for work where AI is now part of the job. Nora, this book is 1999, and it is the origin of a great deal of vocabulary people still use.
Strengths-based management essentially starts here in its popular form, and so does the employee engagement survey industry.
Start with the 12 questions, because that is the commercial heart of it.
Gallup's argument was that most engagement surveys ask about things employees cannot control and managers cannot change. So they hunted for the smallest set of questions that actually distinguished high-performing units from low-performing ones.
And they landed on 12.
12, and they are strikingly concrete. Do I know what is expected of me? Do I have the materials and equipment to do my work right? Do I have the opportunity to do what I do best every day? Have I received recognition in the last 7 days? Does my supervisor seem to care about me as a person? Is there someone at work who encourages my development?
Those are unusually small questions.
Deliberately. Their claim was that the answers depend far more on the immediate manager than on the company, which produced the line the book is remembered for: people leave managers, not companies.
And that line has become gospel.
It has, and it is somewhat overstated, but the underlying observation held up well. Variation between teams inside one company is usually larger than variation between companies.
Notice the third question, because that is our episode.
Do I have the opportunity to do what I do best every day? That is a question about job design, and it is being asked of the employee rather than of the organization chart.
The authors.
Marcus Buckingham, British, studied social and political science at Cambridge, then spent 17 years at Gallup working on this research. Kurt Kaufman led Gallup's workplace management practice.
And afterwards,
Buckingham became the public face of the strengths movement. He wrote Now, Discover Your Strengths, then left Gallup, founded his own company, and later ran people research at a large payroll and human resources firm. He has kept publishing, including work arguing that most performance rating systems measure the rater rather than the person rated.
Which is a good instinct.
It is one of the better ideas in his later career, and we will meet it again when we do performance management properly.
The four keys.
1. Select for talent, not merely experience, intelligence, or determination. 2. Define the right outcomes, not the right steps. 3. Focus on strengths, not on remediating weaknesses. 4. Find the right fit, rather than promoting people up a ladder.
Take them in order, and give me the neurodiversity read as we go, because I think 3 of the 4 are directly on point.
Selecting for talent first. Their definition of talent is a recurring pattern of thought, feeling, or behavior that can be productively applied. Not a skill, which is learnable, and not knowledge. A pattern.
And the practical consequence?
That you hire for the pattern and train the skill, rather than screening on credentials and experience that mostly track access. Which is the same argument Grant was making in episode 8 about who gets identified as promising, arriving from a completely different direction 24 years earlier.
And the risk in it?
That talent as a recurring pattern is hard to assess in an interview, so in practice organizations assess it through impression, and impression favors people who present in expected ways. This is the same failure we named in episode 4 with hiring. Unless the assessment is a work sample, selecting for talent quietly becomes selecting for familiarity.
Key 2, define outcomes, not steps.
And this is the single most useful sentence in the book for our purposes. If a manager specifies the result and the standard and leaves the route open, then two people can reach the same outcome by different paths and both be correct.
Say what that does in practice.
It converts a great many accommodations into ordinary management. If the requirement is that the analysis is right and delivered by Thursday, then whether it was produced in 1 8-hour block or six scattered ones, in an office or at home, in silence or with headphones, is simply not a managerial question anymore. Nobody has to ask permission for a route that was never specified.
And when the steps are specified,
then every difference becomes a deviation requiring justification, and the person has to disclose in order to work. That is the whole mechanism by which ordinary job design forces disclosure.
This connects backward
to Drucker in episode 3, who said measure contribution rather than the performance of engagement. Same principle, older suit.
Key 3, strengths.
Their claim is that the great managers spend disproportionate time with their best people, and that time spent shoring up weaknesses produces mediocrity rather than excellence. The phrase they use is casting rather than fixing.
And Drucker again.
Drucker in 1967 said staff for what a person can do and build the job so the weakness is irrelevant. This is that, with survey data attached. And it is the closest thing on the shelf to the modern argument for spiky profiles, which is that people who are exceptional at some things are often genuinely poor at others, and that hiring systems built to screen out the poor parts screen out the spike as well.
Key 4, fit.
Their objection is to the latter, the assumption that the reward for excellence is a different job. They want organizations to create genuine prestige and pay at every level, so that a person can grow inside the work they are good at rather than being promoted away from it.
Which is rock stars and superstars from episode 6.
Kim Scott's version is 18 years later and rhymes exactly. And for anyone whose excellence is domain-specific rather than general, the latter is a mechanism for converting a great employee into a struggling manager and then concluding they were never that good.
Two smaller ideas before the critique, because managers use them wrong.
The first is what they call the one right way fallacy. Most training assumes there is a correct method and the job is to install it in everyone. Their observation from the interviews was that great managers did the opposite. They let people reach the standard by their own route and only intervened when the outcome slipped.
And the second,
recognition, which is one of the 12 questions and the one organizations handle worst. Their finding was that the frequency matters more than the grandeur and that the form has to fit the person. Some people want it publicly. Some people would rather be quietly told and left alone.
That last part is not a small detail for us.
It is a significant one. Public recognition is a social event with an audience and an expected reaction, and for some people it is a cost rather than a reward. A manager who only has one mode, praise in the meeting, is delivering a penalty to part of the team while believing they are being generous. Asking each person how they want to be told is 30 seconds of work, and it is almost never done.
What has not held up?
Start with the evidence, because the book presents itself as research, and it is not research in the sense a scientist would mean.
Explain.
The data is proprietary. Gallup owns it, has never made it available for independent reanalysis, and the 12-item instrument is a commercial product that organizations pay to administer. The book is simultaneously the finding and the sales brochure for the finding. That does not make it false, and it does mean nobody outside has ever checked it.
The strongest claim.
That people do not change that much, which is doing an enormous amount of work in this book, and which is stated more firmly than the personality literature supports. Traits are moderately stable in adulthood, not fixed, and they shift measurably across a lifespan. Read strictly, it is an argument for never developing anyone.
And that has a specific danger for us.
A sharp one. People do not change that much can become the reason a neurodivergent employee is never offered development, never stretched, never considered for the next thing, on the grounds that this is simply who they are. The same sentence that justifies casting to strengths justifies writing someone off, and only the manager's intention distinguishes them.
The tension with the last two episodes is obvious.
It is, and I would not paper over it. Dweck says ability develops. Buckingham says patterns are stable. Both are partly right, and the resolution is the one we reached in episode 10. Conditions and strategies are highly changeable. Underlying processing patterns are much less so. A manager who confuses those two categories will either demand impossible change or refuse possible development.
And the strengths movement generally
has produced far more consulting revenue than independent evidence. The instruments have been criticized on psychometric grounds, and the evidence that strengths-based interventions improve performance is thinner than the marketing implies.
The tier.
Practitioner literature, built on an enormous but unauditable private dataset, containing two or three ideas about job design that are among the most useful in this series.
Recap in this show's frame. First, break all the rules says manage each person differently, cast to strengths, and define outcomes rather than steps. For neurodivergent leader or one leading neurodivergent people, the operating instructions are these. Specify the result and the standard and leave the route open, because that single change converts a pile of accommodations into ordinary management and removes the need to disclose in order to work. Build seats around what people are exceptional and instead of grinding down what they are not. Stop treating promotion as the only reward, because it takes people out of the work they are best at. And treat people do not change that much as a statement about processing patterns, never as a reason to stop developing someone. And AI.
The four keys are all about job design, and that is unglamorous written work that never gets done because nobody has the afternoon.
Be concrete.
Defining outcomes rather than steps requires writing down what the result actually is, at what standard, by when, and how it will be judged. Most managers have never written that down for any role they supervise. A model turns that from an afternoon into 10 minutes, and the artifact is the thing that does the work.
And on selection.
The book wants you to hire for pattern rather than credential. Designing a work sample that tests the pattern is genuinely hard, and it is exactly the kind of task these tools help with. That is the pro-social use.
And the anti-social one.
Screening resumes at scale, which is the same technology aimed the other way, and which will reproduce whatever pattern it was trained on with a confident interface over the top. If an organization automates selection before it has fixed what it is selecting for, it has industrialized the problem this book identified in 1999.
The usual caution.
Evidence that AI support improves outcomes for neurodivergent workers is early and mostly practitioner reports. Promising practice, not established fact.
Nora, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
That is First Break All the Rules. Next time on 60 Books, Quiet by Susan Cain and The Office That Was Designed for Personality Half the Workforce Does Not Have. I'm Miles. See you then. Thank you.